We acknowledge that we are on the traditional lands of the Kulin Nation. We pay our respects to elders, past, present, and emerging, and acknowledge the Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander peoples' spirit, imagination, and rich history of storytelling and humour that is an inspiration for all Australians.
Hello! Welcome to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, I am your host and the suppository of all wisdom, Matt Harvey. Thanks for tuning in to another episode of The Bearer of Weird News. As always, this podcast is made possible by a generous grant, and this episode, the generous grant is brought to you by restarting and ending the same war over and over again. Now celebrating over 4,000 years of failing to learn a single lesson. Whether you're looking to avenge the last atrocity, create the next refugee crisis, or simply guarantee another generation grows up traumatized enough to continue the cycle, nobody does perpetual conflict like us, the world. Restarting and ending the same war over and over again. Why invest in schools, hospitals, or diplomacy when you can repeatedly flatten them and call the reconstruction phase nation building? With over 70 seasons and zero character development, and somehow every reboot insists it is a completely new situation and not at all related to the last one, starting the same war over and over again is here for you. The conflict so equally popular and unpopular, we've rebooted it more times than Spider-Man. You know, until we get it right. Critics are calling it derivative, needlessly expensive, the bloodiest clip show in human history, because nothing says never again quite like, well, let's do the same thing again next election. You know, it's circular economy warfare, because history doesn't repeat itself. No. It needs help. It gets workshopped by think tanks, focus grouped by politicians, rebranded by public relations firms, approved by arms manufacturers, and then live streamed in 4K. Restarting and ending the same war over and over again, the closest humanity has ever come to renewable energy. It's 100% recyclable trauma! But as thankful as we are for restarting and ending the same war over and over again for all of their support, and we really do appreciate it, this, all of this, is really only possible due to the generous support of loyal viewers like yourselves, who continue to make all of this possible over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff, where you can support the bullshit arts. Nay, you're not supporters of the bullshit arts, you are patrons of the bullshit arts. Some would even say enablers of the bullshit arts, but we don't allow that kind of negative talk around here. We encourage having conviction and seeing it through to its inevitably silly ending. And you can see to it that this does not come to an end by contributing over at patreon.com/MattHarveyStuff. Pick a tier, whatever suits your budget. Or, if you really want to help the bullshit arts, make it become more than just a podcast in your ear, but a living function in the world. You can come out to some of my live shows. That's right, I have live shows, not of this podcast at this point, unless that's something you're interested in, but I do have stand-up and storytelling shows that I tour around. Right now, I am touring the latest version of my show, Jokes About the Time I Got Detained in America and Other Stories, and I'll be bringing those around in the later half of the year to the Sydney Fringe, September 15th to 19th, at the Erskineville Town Hall as part of the Emerging Artists Sharehouse. I'll be in a room called The Spare Room, so come check that out if you're in Sydney. If you're in Melbourne, you can come to the Melbourne Fringe. I'll be in two venues. There's a place called The Motley Warehouse, which is just near the Vic Market in the city, from October 5th until the 11th. And then I'll be at a venue called Transcendence at the In-Flight Room, which is shaped like an airplane. And it's a beautiful space. It's quite fun. I'll be there from the 15th until the 18th. So a real short run there, right at the end of the festival. And after that, I'll be going to the Geelong Comedy Festival, one show only, October 23rd, at the Geelong Club downstairs. So if you're interested in supporting the Bullshit Arts in person, come say hello. I'd love to come see you out there. Until then, my friends, until then, I will be the bearer of weird news. Let's get into the headlines, shall we? Anti-Semitism envoy Gillian Siegel said many Jewish Australians are upset that the ABC and SBS news coverage of Israeli soldiers murdering children in an attempt to create an ethno-state paints them in a negative light. Surely you can't bomb Gaza, level neighborhoods, and expand settlements and then act shocked that the reporting isn't exactly flattering. ABC and SBS have, of course, defended their Gaza coverage at the Anti-Semitism Royal Commission, saying they achieved perfect balance by making it absolutely clear that everybody is furious at them for one reason or another, calling it not good enough. Gillian Siegel went on to say this coverage comes at the expense of other world news, such as wars in Africa, saying, "Well, there are starving children in Africa who would love this kind of news coverage." Real classic angry mum energy coming from Gillian there. Former Scottish First Minister Nicola Sturgeon and former Conservative Minister Michael Gove are set to lead a fictional government in a reality TV show depicting Britain at war with Russia. Sturgeon and Gove are Britain's most unlikely coalition since Liz Truss and Basic Arithmetic. Originally, the producers wanted a believable fictional government, but eventually had to compromise with whoever was most likely to be bought. In lieu of a fee, Nicola has agreed to do the show for a luxury bag, a pen, and a motorhome, whereas Gove is going to get his home furnished. Michael Gove and Nicola Sturgeon pretending to run Britain in a crisis may sound ridiculous, but it does answer a question nobody was asking. What if politics had even fewer consequences? This fictional government is the only government less accountable than the real one. The UK has experienced its warmest June on record this year, with heat reaching 37.7 degrees Celsius in a rare extreme weather event known everywhere else in the world as summer. The government has urged citizens to stay cool, stay hydrated, and under absolutely no circumstances ask, "Why are these record temperatures happening every year? What is going on?" It's best not to ask these kinds of things, you know? Ticket reseller StubHub UK has been ordered to refund more than 50,000 customers and pay a whopping $900,000 fine for not showing people the total price up front when buying tickets. Now, £900,000 does sound like a lot of money, and it is until ticket resellers add the refund administration fee, the handling fee, the compliance fee, the processing fee, and the mandatory charge for reading this sentence fee. They'll get that money back in no time. The ticketing industry has vowed to find more creative ways to ruin live music before the year's end. So we can look forward to that. A plan to auction more than 100 artifacts salvaged from the wreckage of the Titanic, including personal belongings, currency, kitchen items, and decor, is facing pushback from the US government, according to newly unsealed court documents. It's unusual for the Trump administration to intervene in a plan to turn anything, let alone a maritime grave, into some sort of car boot sale. I guess he's just waiting to see if anyone from the Saudi government is looking to buy anything first. You know, he does love to do a good deal. The auction house argues the artifacts should be shared with the public, specifically the section of the public that can afford £40,000 for a spoon from a tragedy. The wreck was discovered 13,000 feet underwater, but apparently that's not deep enough to escape the arm of capitalism. Police in Miami have cracked down on Scottish people putting cones on statues in Boston as the Tartan Army descended on the city ahead of their match against Brazil. US police did what they always do when they see someone in a decorative headpiece that they don't understand. Assumed it was an extremist threat and treated it as hostile. They are investigating if they need to put the Tartan Army on their list of known terror groups, or if they're too white for that kind of list. Usually, when a group of white people puts cones on their heads, it gets praised by US police, especially in Florida. Less than 2 weeks after becoming the first person to achieve it, Elon Musk lost his trillionaire status, making him the Liz Truss of wealth brackets. For a brief moment, Musk possessed wealth measured in units normally reserved for national debt, interstellar distances, and children's estimates on how many jelly beans fit in a jar. And now, he must endure the harrowing setback of remaining Elon Musk. It is his unique burden to bear. Apparently, even $1 trillion couldn't save him from that. The owner of the world's smallest violin factory is looking to take his trillionaire status after being unable to keep up with demand. The federal government has proposed new legislation to strengthen Australia's social media age restrictions for under 16s, upgrading the social media ban from complete dog shit to mildly useless. The government is set to impose a duty of care on social media companies so that they will have to behave more responsibly and with more expectations of looking after the Australian citizens than the government themselves. An Australian Amazon employee who was fired for making smart-ass Slack messages will be reinstated after the Fair Work Commission found his dismissal was not justified or valid. Comments included things like telling his manager to put your pen down, relax, it seems like you just got your pen license, which is a nice, fun little burn. But it is good to know that the right to be a smartass is still upheld by the powers that be. The way this country has been heading, I've been very unsure about that. Dismissals for smartassery would have set a most dangerous precedent here in Australia. According to Amazon, these messages made his superior feel humiliated and degraded and amounted to harassment, as opposed to the way that Amazon makes their employees feel every single day that they have to show up to their godforsaken jobs. Andy Burnham has just taken the position of the UK's fifth Prime Minister in 4 years. Envious Americans are looking at this rapid turnover of leaders and wondering if they made a mistake leaving the UK 250 years ago as they face the reality of another 250 years of Trump. Edinburgh International Festival director Nicola Benedetti has declared the latest festival a phone-free environment. And at £7 for a slice of pizza, £30 for a ticket, and £3,000 for a week's accommodation, phone-free is the closest you'll come to anything being free during the month of August in Edinburgh. So go right ahead and try and live in the moment. Maybe just take a moment to think about the fact that nobody is charging you a fee to breathe oxygen, at least not yet, maybe next festival. Australia has finally agreed to ditch paper arrival cards on returning flights in a desperate attempt to enter the 20th century, and a devastating blow to the last-minute pen-buying industry. As the government, who couldn't roll out a digital census or build a single website for weather reports, prepares to mess up the rollout of another digital service, retired grandparents, who just can't seem to sync their TV with their Wi-Fi, are wondering how they can be expected to use a digital arrival card across apps for 62 airlines from 40 different countries. I'm sure they'll figure it out. I mean, it won't be that complicated at all. And definitely, we're not going to have to go pick up Grandpa from detention somewhere because he couldn't sync his phone with the Qantas app. Australia has shown its dedication to India and its relationship with mining by signing a uranium deal with India. Committing to our current levels of environmental destruction by moving from exporting fossil fuels to uranium to power environment-destroying data centres. So good for us. It's nice to have some consistency. Continuing our flawless record of ignoring human rights violations from countries that we're currently making money from. Anthony Albanese has apologised unequivocally for comments that he made about Kylie Minogue in a podcast interview. After days of media outrage, Australians are now forced to find new and stupider ways to ignore much bigger problems in the country and the world. A tennis racket smashed by former Wimbledon champion John McEnroe is expected to fetch up to £5,000 when it is sold later this month. He smashed it to the ground after disagreeing with an umpire's line call, making it the most expensive tantrum since Elon Musk bought Twitter. If rage damage increases an item's value, well, I have an apartment full of what was supposed to be IKEA furniture I didn't realize was a gold mine that I was sitting on like a dragon. H5 bird flu cases have been detected in wild seabirds across Western Australia, South Australia, and New South Wales, forcing the Adelaide Crows, Sydney Swans, and West Coast Eagles to be put into protective custody. The magpies and the hawks and all the animorphs are on standby should cases continue to spread. And that's the end of the headlines, my friends. Now on to the bigger stories, starting with investment news. Kind of escaped your attention, dear listeners, that the news has been dominated quite recently by the rants of arguably one of the most well-known and incoherent Australians.
Just solidified the fact we need another election because you didn't have a mandate for it. You didn't have a mandate for it. You lied blatantly, so it's not valid.
Yeah, Hughesy, you tell them. We definitely need more voices from unbiased opinion givers. The kind of average comedian everyman that makes relatable observations like, there are no living snakes in a bag of snakes alive. And the type of person who owns a small block of Melbourne apartments and a St Kilda property that he apparently accidentally bought for $1.84 million in 2010 after simply driving past the auction. You know that old story, we've all been there. When man meets house, man accidentally drops under $2 million on a house by accident. A tale as old as time. Not to mention that he owns a celebrity house, one of them houses from The Block, you know The Block, that he also bought for $3 million. So guys, he's really just like us, a struggling everyman with a minimum of $5 million in property assets. Of course we're going to take his word on this issue. And surely, if the good people of Australia wanted this, there would be evidence for it. Do we have some evidence?
54% of respondents back a drop in house prices, just 11% oppose, and a fair chunk, 35% are unsure.
Now, Dave, I'm not very good at numbers. I've never invested in property before, unlike yourself. But let's look at some numbers, shall we? And you can tell me what you think. So, 34.7% of voters gave Labor their first preference vote. And that is a significant number of Australians for our voting. That's pretty good turnout. Enough to consider it a landslide at the very least. If I remember the news correctly, right? That was what they said. It was a landslide. And I think it's fair to say, and I'm not an expert, but I think it's fair to say that 54% is higher than 34.7%. Yes? Yes? Are we in agreement? Seems maybe, just maybe, if 34.7% is a landslide, then there is a mandate for doing this. The people, they yearn for cheaper homes. They want to be off the streets. They don't want to have to move every few years due to rising rents. But I bet Husey isn't giving his alleged apartment blocks cheaper prices. Are you, Husey? No. No? You're not looking after the people? I don't know. I can't confirm. Because his alleged apartment block is kept hidden. Nobody really knows where it is, so we can't check the prices. No. We must only have people like Husey, who not only have not changed for the last 30 years, they have actively fought against change. Husey's biggest cultural contributions to date are the above-mentioned whinging that a bag of snakes alive didn't have any alive snakes in it. Wow. The Husey voice, you know, Husey. And that one ad from when he was on the radio, you might not have got this interstate, but we got it here. He was in a bin screaming, "Go round!" at a tram. Go round!
Go round! Go round!
Sitting in a bin, which at this point seems like an apt metaphor for his career. Seems Husey's biggest gripe with Albo is that back in 2021, Albo didn't tell the people of Australia that he was planning on changing the capital gains tax. And that might be because back in 2021, he wasn't. That wasn't on the cards. That's definitely not
what's going on. Yeah, it's definitely that Albo has deceived us all. And he was sneakily trying to bring in a capital gains tax change. Couldn't be that he was meeting the moment and adjusting to the needs of the country right now like a good politician should. How dare the Labour Party meet the economic and political moment of a changing economy and try to help the people of Australia? No, no, that's not what we want to do. I mean, the ones who can't afford $5 million in property, of course. I mean, obviously, changing this isn't, at least in your opinion, very helpful for you. So, what else have you got to complain about, Husey? What have you got for me?
And this affects every working Australian, everyone who actually pays tax, because we all have to have super, which is investments. And you've just doubled the fucking take on it.
Oh no! Husey is angry!
What's going on? Why do I have to get so angry?
Why do you get so angry, Husey? Why do you get so angry? We've been wondering the same thing for about 30 years now, Husey, because that's been your shtick for about 30 years, because you refuse to change. I mean, at this point, he's just hulking out, isn't he? He's like the Incredible Hulk, but like instead of strength, he just gets more and more conspiracy theories. The Incredulous Hulk! The Incredulous Husey! Ooh. That's the name of his next tour, I guarantee it. I mean, at the moment, it's called Cooked, which, he couldn't have timed better, but heck, that's a choice that he made. But it seems like the Snakes Alive bag, you are way off the mark, Husey. The snakes were never meant to be alive, Husey. And the capital gains tax is not what Husey claims it is. So I'm going to put some of my old skills to use here. See, I used to work as a fact checker, and it is time to dust off some of those old skills and do some research. It's time for the fucked check. So, Husey. Husey's mad. Husey's mad because he claims that everyone's super will be impacted by changes to the capital gains tax. Okay. Super funds definitely invest in property. That's unquestionable. Anyone who thinks that there is an investment firm in this country that isn't investing in property is more delusional than Husey when he gets angry. So let's take a look, shall we? Australian Super is the largest superannuation fund in Australia, and it has $410 billion in investments. Very impressive. Of that, 3% is in property, which granted, on $410 billion, 3% is still $12.3 billion. Or, to put it in terms, in units of measurements that Husey might understand, $12.3 billion, that is 4,100 houses. Okay? You got that, Husey? 4,100 houses. Does that work for you, Husey, if we talk like that? Okay, thank you. And head of property at Aware Super, Alec Misev, expects to have half or more of its real estate portfolio invested overseas within 5 years, and said that while the Australian market would remain important, it is simply becoming too small to accommodate the $200 billion super fund's growth and the need to spread risk. As part of the plan to go, quote, truly global, end quote. Truly global in this case is a term that means taking advantage of as many poor people as possible around the world. Look, Hughesy, as of 2024, the superannuation industry is worth about $3.9 trillion, which is about 1,300,000 $3 million houses. Okay, gotcha. We still got your attention, Hughesy. Come on, pay attention now. But only about 6.7% of that goes into the property market. And that, my friend, is a 10-year low. They're actually actively moving away from investing in houses because major super funds prefer to invest in larger scale industrial grade assets like build-to-rent developments, office buildings, or industrial parks rather than scattered residential houses. They need to make money long-term, not scam a bunch of people and make off with their money like their snake oil salesmen in the 1900s or banks before 2008. You know, you get it? Houses do not provide the necessary scale to efficiently manage vast pools of capital, making them a poor fit for institutional portfolios. Commercial properties may prove an attractive alternative for property investors as it appears to remain unaffected by the negative gearing tax reforms. Are you hearing what I'm saying, Hughesy? So stop buying houses and go buy a shop or a parking lot. You can still screw people unnecessarily if you buy a parking lot. You'll get all of the workers' money at that point. And look, buddy, properties that were currently held as of 7:30 p.m. on the 12th of May, 2026, including those under contract awaiting settlement, can continue to be negatively geared until they are sold. This provides protection for investors who have made decisions based on current legislation. Like you, Hughesy. That's you. Look, I know that you claim that you didn't do it for that reason. I understand that. But an everyman comedian like yourself, you would say that so that you could be relatable to the everyman. Eligible new build residential properties would remain exempt from these changes. For these, both negative gearing and the existing capital gains tax of 50% will still be available. So what are you complaining about here? Furthermore, properties in widely held trusts and superannuation funds will be exempt from changes, in addition to targeted exemptions for build-to-rent developments and private investors supporting government housing programs. So they can be incentivized to build more places for people to live, the very thing that we need. I know you like people having places to live, Hughesy. After all, you own a shitload of them already. Not to mention, the federal budget reforms formally exempt retirement superannuation funds, meaning ordinary working Australians' super balances are not directly subject to the new capital gains tax increases and will continue to receive a 1/3 discount on capital gains, paying a maximum CGT rate of just 10%. Do you hear that? Why are you so mad? Did you even bother to read any of this shit? You didn't, did you? No, you heard there was a thing that was going to affect property, and you got mad, didn't you, Hughesy? You got so mad. Oh, I'm Hughesy, and I'm angry. Where did you get your information from, Hughesy? Where did you get it from?
Fed information from someone in the government, because you're not that smart. Or
no,
are you?
I have ideas, and you know what I do? I go on AI,
yeah,
and I work out whether my ideas are right or not, because I know if I get it wrong, they're going to come at me big time.
Why are you going to AI for this bullshit? No wonder you're so mad. You've been brain rotted by AI. Maybe, look, Hughesy, maybe you should have stopped, had a nap or something before jumping to go online and then promising to go on white supremacist supporter Karl Stefanovic's fucking podcast. Choosy, take a snoozy before you losey your temper. And then you choosy to get schmoozy on a podcast with a former newsy who lost his job for supporting white supremacists. I was so close to having something good there. Hughesy, you don't need to worry about the future of super. We got it covered. Seems the superannuations have been acting unreliable and untrustworthy and have gone ahead and done a thing. Yeah, that's right. They've put coal back into super, which... What? Super. What are you doing? What are you doing? A mere 6 years ago, the country's biggest super fund announced that they'd be subject to a net zero carbon emissions target in line with the Paris Agreement. And that's a good thing. That is great. They then proceeded to dump its holdings in large thermal and metallurgical coal miner Whitehaven Coal. But now, they're the single biggest investor in Whitehaven, which operates 6 coal mines in New South Wales and Queensland and is developing more. A quick heads up. Most super providers actually invest in fossil fuels. Okay, just sorry about that. Housing and fossil fuels will, to some degree, fuel your future. And when future generations complain to us, we will have to bear the brunt of that. But, many heavily restrict their exposure to thermal coal, given it is such an environmentally damaging source of energy. But you need to invest in things that are popular, right? That's what you got to do if you want to make money in this industry. Things that will make money. And in Australia, look, there aren't that many of those things. We sell off a lot of industries and we refuse to invest in others. We suffer from cultural cringe, so we don't want to invest locally. But I guess the way to look at it is that Mad Max is the most popular thing to come out of Australia. So they want to invest in that image of Australia. Plus, yeah, if you think about it, if they keep investing in not only coal, but in like the worst kind of coal, then we get to speed run turning the country into Mad Max world, and then they will actually never have to pay out the retirement funds. See? Do you see the end game? There is no need for money when you're a war boy or a blood bag strapped to an engine of a car. Got it. Nailed it. This is a future-proof plan. War boys don't get super. They get the glory of dying historic on the Fury Road. Valhalla awaits. You need super in Valhalla. Hughesy, mate, buddy, champ. If you want an investment that the government will never, ever touch, will never reduce their investment in, will never go back on their promise to put more and more money into. It's very simple. You need to invest in weapons. This way, you can still make the lives of young people worse, but you are guaranteed that the government will never fuck with your precious investments. Moving on now, it is Press Club News. Press Club! There ain't no party like a Press Club party! Time has come to speak about Pauline Hanson. Yeah. She's as inevitable as death and taxes in that the media keeps covering her, and as a media podcast, it means I need to talk about her. Pauline Hanson has spent 30 years turning outrage into political capital. But even though she puts her name front and center on her political party, she doesn't do this alone. Every step of the way, Australia's media has helped carry her. So let's look at the inevitable. Pauline Hanson's press club speech. Take a big breath. I know there's been a lot of coverage of this, but at least we'll have some jokes. I hope you can picture this as clearly as I can, especially as we've we've been in this exact place before. We've seen comparable moments to this moment in history multiple times before. Some of the details have changed, but the same basic movements are happening. Pauline Hanson, arms outstretched, is lifted by the media, looking to grab some easy headlines, cash in on some controversy, and feed the algorithm the outrage it deserves. As she walks up the backs of the working class to achieve a position of power, and the novel headlines and the media opportunities lift her enough that the working class don't feel the full weight of her oppression on their backs until it is too late and they have already voted for her. This was the closest approximation that I could find to that image. And we will come back to this image. Now, you might have seen some polls about Pauline Hanson's rise and more recently, some about their fall, and then some about the rise again, and some about how she has risen but hasn't fallen, and some about how it's staying the same and Labour has risen. There's been a lot of poll talk for an election that's like 2 years away. But I will tell you, dear listener, Hanson isn't becoming more popular. Not at all. And it's not because her politics have improved or because she's meeting the moment. No, no, no. She's not even truly become more popular, really. She is, however, seemingly becoming more relevant because Australia's media keeps manufacturing her relevance, splashing her on front pages, spilling precious ink on her stupid quotes, and highlighting her ignorance because it's a fun change from the usual horrors that they have to report on or the just dull, boring drudgery of general politics. In an attempt to counter the narrative laid out by Hanson and her followers that the media never gives Pauline Hanson a fair go, they invite her to the press club to spew her unique brand of ignorance that, let's be honest, should never have outlived slap bands or Tupac, that is to say, that it should have died in the 90s. But the media keeps treating Hanson as a major political force when realistically, she isn't anything more than a novelty spite vote. This is partly because voters want the promise of a Trumpian figure, a political outsider who says it like it is and will shake up politics to help the little guy, despite the obviousness of how poorly that has gone her entire career. But they've backed the wrong politician. The first clue is in the job title. They've instead attach themselves to basically a career politician who, granted, does say a lot of the naughty words that some of them like to hear and speaks a big game about defending, quote, Australian values, end quote, whatever that means. In your estimation, your guess is as good as mine, to be honest. Despite attempting to sell this country out to foreign interests, aka the NRA, and consistently taking overseas trips to places like CPAC. And frankly, she has a real disdain for the working class. People who are raising her up, outsourcing work for both her cartoon and political ads to overseas, to the Philippines and Indonesia respectively. Work that could go to hardworking Aussies, to people who, quite frankly, would like to get paid to support her. If they really want a Trump figure, then I guess, realistically, shouldn't they go to Clive Palmer? After all, they're both rich parasites who can't stay awake on the job and have a documented history of ripping off workers. They seem like a perfect match to me. But I get it. Clive Palmer's rich. You don't want to support a known rich quantity, despite following up on your seeming love of Hanson, who has herself become quite well off. She used to be a fish and chip shop owner, so she has a good narrative, doesn't she? But let's be honest, the only reason Trump gets away with it is because A, it's America, and let's be honest, that is a major factor, and B, truthfully, he does have charisma, like in the same way that P.T. Barnum had charisma, you know, with the same disdain for those who worked for him. Whereas Pauline, I'm going to tell you, Pauline's a charisma vacuum. She has all the charm and social grace of a fresh lobotomy patient. In the 30 years since she's been at least politically adjacent, not only has she never actually advanced any legislation, she has always voted down worker protections, pay rises, and environmental legislation, or basically anything that would help the struggling Aussie battlers that she claims to represent. And more recently, doing so while hanging out with multi-millionaires on their private planes or yachts, and skipped work a whole bunch, not only in the past, but recently to go on a free flight to Mar-a-Lago to say all the same shit that she says here for free. It's not even the first time that the media has had a hand in cleaning Hanson's reputation and returning her to normality. Some of our younger listeners might not remember Pauline Hanson did a stint on Dancing with the Stars directly after she did time in prison. Oh yeah, you might not remember, she also did time in prison for alleged voting fraud. In what has increasingly become known as the reality TV to normalization pipeline, to such a degree that even though she left Parliament in 1998 and wasn't back until 2016, she has never had to have a regular job ever again. She just jumped from paid media appearance to paid media appearance and did another reality TV show, The Celebrity Apprentice, which might explain why she has such a big love for Trump. She didn't do the Trump version of it, but that's his brand, his TV show. Trump, you, younger viewers might not also know that Trump used to be a reality TV star before he became a politician. And she's just been, Hanson has just been traveling the talking circuit, doing appearances, not to mention her paid media appearances. And I know I already mentioned that earlier, but just feels like such a relevant point at this point, it was worth pointing out twice. As long as she keeps saying the latest buzzwords, voters won't question her on it. And the press won't even defend their own when attacked directly by her. Because if they do, they'll probably have their press club membership revoked for the heinous crime of doing journalism. Sorry, no, for the heinous crime of tweeting about doing some journalism. Now, I will grant you, tweeting in 2026 is something of a reprehensible act, but frankly, we're seeing the Trump effect on Australian politics and media. It's happening right now. And the media is very much to blame. The media has not only failed to hold Pauline Hanson to account, they have abetted her rise in popularity, softening the true madness of her ideas by not pushing back enough, and are now banning people who criticise the very same free press that they have given her. Failing to hold Hanson to harsher scrutiny is a mad choice, given in this very same speech, she said that she intends to completely defund SBS for, I believe, the crime of being the brownest network. Yep, that's, I believe that's a direct quote. Or maybe it was simply for daring to inform non-white people about the world and things that are happening. Although at the moment, a lot of World Cup coverage. It's not a lot of news. It's just all World Cup. And also, she threatened to cut the ABC's funding for those who live in the city, turning it instead into a subscription model, which arguably it already is. It's just that the subscription is an involuntary 4 cents a year. Now, I've been forced to pay higher subscription fees for services that not only used to be free, but I use way less than the ABC. So I don't see this as an issue, but the 4 cents a year is really not a problem. It's not exactly breaking open the bank. Pauline Hanson threatening to disarm the media is like Superman threatening to destroy the Earth's yellow sun. Without the media, she is nothing. Her message will go to nobody. She will become useless to billionaires intent on manipulating the public. They can just go to another major party and they will get what they want from them. Her power is in being a fringe lunatic that the media can't look away from. Sort of the human equivalent of a clown car colliding with another clown car. So a worried and curious public looks on as the media reports burning clown after burning clown running from the inside of said cars, as tragic as it is an undeniable spectacle. During the 2016 presidential campaign, Donald Trump received an estimated $2 billion to $5 billion worth of free advertising, or what they call earned media, so unpaid news and commentary coverage. Now, I don't think Pauline has it in her to turn away that kind of free media coverage. She'd be mad to try and turn away that kind of free media coverage. But she has certainly received the Trump media treatment, now more than ever, with her weekly recaps on poll after poll, talking about if she could be the next PM. Which, by the way, a mathematical impossibility, given that she would have to go from 1 to 76 seats, a 7,500% increase in seats, unprecedented in the history of politics. Given the election isn't until 2028, and that Hansen has already fallen in the polls and then climbed again and then fallen again and then sort of balanced and evened out, based on the comments made at her press club speech, pushing the idea that she could keep the needed momentum for a 7,500% boost in seats, has even the remotest chance of being the next PM is astronomically reckless. Just crazy talk on behalf of the media. But I get it. It's fun. Sort of fun to talk about her in a way that you don't get to talk about other politicians in. And the media loves doing that. The media loves the Hansen story so much that we have gone out of our way to change the way that we do polls. The media has previously only ever used the current PM and the leader of the opposition as the preferred prime minister. And now suddenly, One Nation is getting a look in. Like, what the fuck? Despite having the same number of seats in the House of Representatives as the Greens, one. And significantly less numbers in the Senate, 4 to the Greens' 11 Senate seats. Directly comparing One Nation with Labour as if they are already the opposition despite their, and I cannot emphasise this enough, one seat in the House of Representatives. And I get it, the Liberals are really fucking things up. Hard. But we've never done this for another political party in the past. Not even after the Queensland had what they called the Green Slide. And we are calling Queensland Greensland. Remember that? That was a fun 6 seconds in the media. And it paints an inaccurate picture of the chances that One Nation actually has of paving a pathway to prime ministership, which, while not impossible, is statistically insignificant and extremely unlikely. The media's lionizing of One Nation's rise, remember, it's one seat in the House of Representatives, also ignores that Pauline Hanson isn't even herself in the House of Representatives, which, yes, technically she doesn't have to be, but it has only happened once before, and even then, Senator John Gorton only won the leadership in 1968 after the Chinese took Harold Holt into their submarine, right? So that was pretty extreme circumstances. And Gorton actually quit the Senate and ran in a by-election for the House of Representatives. So he did the right thing. Even if One Nation takes 30% of the votes where they are sitting currently in the polls, you know, they're at about 30%. You know, it sort of fluctuates between 28 and 31, up and down a little bit like that. But even if they took 30% of the votes, which again, unlikely, but maybe, that's still only 45 seats. Currently, Labour still holds the majority with 94 of 150 seats. They'd have to lose 50 seats for One Nation to be a danger at all. But they'd still be able to negotiate, maybe form a minority government with the Liberals or the Nationals or the Greens, or the Teals, the Independents. And while I don't see the LNP uniting with Labour, those 45 seats will have to come from somewhere. There's a strong chance it's LNP seats that will go first. So if One Nation takes the LNP seats, they wouldn't even be able to form government with them anyway. If any parliamentarian could convince 75 members of the House to support their bid for PM without holding the majority party, I think they would deserve to be the next PM. But as I've already mentioned, Hanson is a charisma vacuum. Nobody's getting behind that horse. But the media, they need headlines. They need headlines that people will click on. Sort of rags to riches of the dark horse narrative. A term, by the way, that she would hate. Why can't it be a white horse? I can already hear her raging, right? She continues to deride the media, even now, as they continue to lift up her narrative. Yep, even in this article about her being an outsider, which brings us back to the media, allowing people to use reality TV to reputation wash. And Hanson's Dancing with the Stars season. So, despite consistently receiving some of the lowest scores from the in-house judges due to her basic technique, Hanson used a passionate public following and high telephone voting tallies to make it to the final round, finishing in second place. Which, wow, is such an obvious analogy for the upcoming election and so on the nose that I couldn't balance it if I was a seal. It couldn't be more on the nose unless you had the Steve Martin nose from Roxanne. And despite everything else, she's unlikely to ever become PM. Nobody has ever done a Bradbury that hard. That would be true Australian values. But the media might willingly and comfortably lift her up into opposition leader. Again, helping her take second place in a competition that she really had no place being in, that she's unskilled for, and that the judges have deemed her inadequate for, redeeming her in the eyes of some Australians. That'd be infinitely worse for the average Australian. I've said it for many years. Opposition leader is the best job in Parliament. And I can't prove it, but I'm confident that when most people run for PM, they're really running for leader of the opposition. You get all the access to money and power with none of the responsibility. A sort of reverse Spider-Man, you know, the people's adversary, an unfriendly national Spider-Man. She'll be able to shout insults from the peanut gallery and say that the party in power is doing a bad job, as long as the party in charge is actually Labour that has to govern, because then she'll have all the backing of the Murdoch media, who will give her a free ride to do so. Pauline Hanson has always depended on Australia's media to turn spectacle into influence. Every headline asking whether she'll become Prime Minister does exactly what it claims to analyse. It makes her seem like a plausible contender. If journalism wants to stop manufacturing populism, it first needs to stop treating every outrage merchant as compulsory viewing. More on this as the quality of our politics falls into the toilet in the coming years. Moving on now, well, sort of moving on now, moving on to a different aspect of the same story now, it's monoculture news. Yeah, it's more Hanson. Sorry, guys, but again, I talk about what the news talks about. And as the media is determined to not hold her to account, notable exceptions, of course, being SBS and NITV reporters who actually gave her some pushback at her speech, we are going to go through some of the things that Pauline Hanson has said in her press club speech and look at her voting record to compare. There might be no truth in political advertising laws. Well, not you, South Australia. You can sit down. But voting records, they do leave a paper trail. So let's establish a baseline of truth. The very first thing that she said in her speech was this.
Net overseas migration in the first 3 years under this Albanese Labor government has totalled 1.27 million people.
So first off, small thing, very small thing, like, it doesn't matter too much, but it is just establishing the baseline of truth. that it's actually 1.3 million. Like, if you're going to scaremonger, then let's do me the courtesy of being mathematically accurate. You know, in 2024 to 2025, that was 306,000. In 2023 to 2024, that's 429,000. In 2022 to 2023, there was 568,000. Okay, so then we've got that. Now, she also said,
that's more than 423,000 per year.
Which you can see from the numbers that I literally just provided, it isn't. She's just gone and averaged it, which is wrong statistically. That's not how you do that. The number has actually steadily been dropping year after year. You can see its decline in the numbers that I literally just provided you.
A total of more than 1.9 million people arrived in Australia from mid-2022 to mid-2025.
Now, I don't know where she got this number. Total numbers was more like 2.1 million, which granted is more than what she's claiming, okay? But that, if anything, would have played better for her, right? If she'd had the accurate number, she could have claimed a higher number was coming in. So even though after you account for people who've left, which you are supposed to do, the NOM is only 1.4 million. But her supporters, they're not going to do that work, right? They're not going to go out and find an accurate NOM so that you could have had a more accurate number to scare people with, right? That's work that I don't really expect them to do. But as I've already said, if you're going to scaremonger, at least do me the courtesy of being mathematically accurate. We also haven't accounted for how many of those people are Australians returning to Australia, as is their right, nor New Zealanders who, let's be honest, and don't forget, we have reciprocal work rights across both countries, guys. They can come here, we can go there. So we are jumping across the ditch back and forth all the time.